So after we have all of the divine ways that HaKadosh Baruch Hu established the authority and the shlichus of Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron, so at the very end of the parsha we have a lot of mitzvos, and indeed these mitzvos represent all of the different matanos that are given to Kohanim and Levim. So they're not stam mitzvos, it's not just you have a story of Korach and a bunch of mitzvos, but rather there's a very definite reason why these mitzvos are there. Because now that Hashem has demonstrated to us that Levim and Kohanim are the people that God has chosen to do the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, and number one. Number two, God has demonstrated that those who attempt to do the Avodah, who are not qualified Kohanim and Levim, are in great danger, the 250 people who died. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you need Kohanim and Levim for really two reasons. There are two things, particularly that they do. They do the Avodah, and their job is also to be guardians to prevent Klal Yisrael from approaching. They're kind of like, especially Levim. Levim themselves were kind of guards and the like. So because of this role, and because of the fact as well that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says they don't own land in Eretz Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu requires us to support them. And the Rambam says, by analogy, this is the notion of supporting people who are learning Torah, etc. And these are the 24 gifts that we give to Kohanim and Levim. Now, I don't want to go over all of them, but I just want to be sure that everyone understands the basic halachos. The agricultural gifts, we know that you have to give truma to a Kohen. And what is truma? So truma, the oraisa, has no shiur. Even one grain from a whole farm is enough. But the Chachamim were misaking that you either give 1/60th if you're stingy, 1/50th if you're average, and 1/40th if you're generous. So you ask the Shaila, how much Truma do I give? So the rabbi asks you, are you stingy or generous? You say, oh, I'm stingy. Okay, you give 1/60th. After the Truma is separated, and that goes to the Kohen, so then a 10%, now this is 10% of what's left after the Truma, 10%, is separated and given to the Levi, and that is called Maser Rishon. Now, the Torah in this parsha does not mention Maser Sheni or Maser Ani for a very good reason, because the Torah here is not giving you all of the things you have to separate. It's only giving you the things that go to Kohanim and Levim. So Kohanim and Levim, a Kohen gets Truma, and a Levi gets Maser Rishon. And from the Maser Rishon, the Levi gets, the Levi is supposed to separate 10% of that and give it to the Kohen, and that is called Trumas Maser. Now, we know in addition, there was a second 10% that depending on the year, the farmer either took Yerushalayim and ate, that's called Maser Sheni, and that was year 1, 2, 4, and 5 of Shemitah, of the Shemitah cycle, or the 10% went to the poor people, and that's called Maser Ani, and that's year 3 and 6. Shemitah itself, whatever grows wild, there is no chiyuv of Trumas and Masras at all. But that is not in Parshas Korach, because Parshas Korach is only mentioning the stuff that goes to Kohanim and Levim. In addition, what about Korbanos? So we divide Korbanos into two categories. If you say Korbanos in the morning, you know this, we have a whole parak of Mishnayos, Ezeyo Makom and Chol Tzvachim. The truth of the matter is, you can do an awful lot of learning if one knows what you're saying in the Siddur, and you say what's in the Siddur. You actually do a lot of learning before davening, a whole parak of Mishnayos. In fact, it's brought down, you know, there are over 500 parakim of Mishnayos. So why do we choose this parak, Ezeyo Makom on Shel Zvachim? So one of the answers is, it is the only parak in all of Shas in which there's no machlokas, there's no disagreement about any of its halachas. The halachas are absolutely clear. So you're learning something in which there's no machlokas. But you'll recall that there's a chiluk that is drawn between what are called kodshei kedoshim. Now this is not the room that's holy of holies. This is the korbanos that are called kodshei kedoshim versus korbanos that are called kodshei kalim, lighter kedushim. And bekitzer, kodshei kedoshim would be an ola that is totally burnt on the Mizbeach, the Kohanim get nothing, or a Chatas or an Asham, a sin offering or a guilt offering. They are Kodshei Kedoshim. Why are they Kodshei Kedoshim? because we burn the inner organs and fats on the Mizbeach, but all of the meat can only be eaten by Zichrei Kahuna, the males of Kahuna, and they have to eat it in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, or the courtyard of the Mishkan. So Kodshei Kedoshim, Kohanim get all the meat, and they have to eat it in the area of the Beis HaMikdash. Kodshim Kalim would include korbanos like a korban todah, a Thanksgiving offering, or a peace offering. And there, the rule is, most of the meat is eaten by the Israel who brings the korban, but the Kohanim are given portions, the chazeh is the breast, and the shok is the right rear leg, the right thigh. That is given to Kohanim, that's in this parsha. But unlike Kodshei Kedoshim, it doesn't have to be eaten in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, it could be eaten anywhere in Yerushalayim, and it could be shared with their children, with their wives, and the like. So in Parshas Korach, this is where we see the chiluk between Kodshei Kedoshim, in which it can only be eaten by Zichrei Kahuna in the Chatzer HaMishkan, Chatzer HaMikdash, called the Azara, versus Kodshim Kalim, that could be eaten anywhere in Yerushalayim, but the Kohen is still given the Chazeh V'Shok, and the Chazeh V'Shok can be eaten with their children, with their wives, etc. Right? All of that is in Parshas Korach. Now, let's take an animal called the Bechor. Now this will be very Nogel Lemaisa, at least it will come to. The Torah says, every firstborn animal, that kosher firstborn animal, well, not everyone, the kosher deer is not, but if it's from a cow, a sheep, or a goat, that animal is a Bechor. Firstborn is a Bechor. That Bechor has Kedusha. You give that Bechor to a Kohen. It belongs to a Kohen. If it is unblemished, if it doesn't have a mum, the Kohen brings it as a korban, and it's totally his. But it's not Kodshei Kedoshim, it's Kodshim Kalim. The Kohen eats it anywhere in Yerushalayim. What if the Bechor has a blemish? A Bechor that has a blemish must still be given to a Kohen. But the Kohen checks it outside of the Beis HaMikdash and is treated like Chol. Okay, this is the Din of Bechor. A Bechor is given to a Kohen. Now, it's important to understand that theoretically, this halacha does apply today. If I am a farmer, and I have a cow, and the cow has not given birth yet, and the cow gives birth to a firstborn male animal, that firstborn male animal is a Bechor. What on earth am I supposed to do with the Bechor? Giving it to a Kohen, well, actually, I do have the right to give it to a Kohen, but that doesn't help. The Kohen is not going to be grateful to me. What does the Kohen do with the Bechor? He has a Korban. Not allowed to bring a Korban. It's a real problem. So you might give me the answer, well, okay, so let's make a mum, let's make a scratch in the animal's ear, and now the Kohen could check it. Well, that would work, except for the fact that there's an Isser D'Oraisa to deliberately make a mum in a korban. Once it has a mum, we have this halacha, but you're not allowed to make a mum. So what do you do? So, what you're supposed to do, if you're a farmer, this is what you're supposed to do. When the cow is pregnant, you're supposed to sell a little bit of the cow to a goy. And it could even be very insignificant. You could sell the tail to a goy. You could sell the earlobe to a goy. Because the Mishnah says, any animal in which a Jew and a goy have partnership, no matter how insignificant the chelik of the goy, the animal that gives birth to does not have the holiness of a Bechor. Meaning, it's not that it's half Kadosh and half not Kadosh. If it's born from an animal of Shitfus, there is no Kedusha at all. So every Jewish farmer is told by a posek, by the Rav, sell the ear. Now, you only have to do this if the animal had not given birth before. Otherwise, the other animals are not going to be Bechor. Sell the ear, and that's Mavkia Bechor. And not only is it Mavkia Bechor, but it's Mavkia the Kohen's Bailus. You don't even have to give it to the Kohen. You can keep it. Because it only belongs to the Kohen if it has the holiness of a Bechor. Okay, that's fine. So, if you did this before the cow gave birth, you're okay, no problem. What if you didn't do it? What if you were a Baal Tshuva? What if you didn't know the halacha? What if you weren't religious? And you now have this bechor around. What's supposed to happen? Well, you're in big trouble. Basically, what you can do is you can indirectly cause the animal to get a mum by kind of putting some barbed wire around the pasture and letting the animal run and hope the animal will scratch itself. But then, of course, you'll need a rav to paskin. In fact, in the time of the Gemara, you know, we have different levels of ordination. The lowest level of ordination is you're qualified to paskin on Isser Veheter, kosher trait. That's called Yore Yore. Even today we have levels, although we don't have real smicha, but the authorization that a person gets when they're a rabbi, you know, will define what they're authorized to do. Yore Yore means you can paskin Isser Veheter. Yadin Yadin, which is a higher smicha, means you could be a dayan. You could even paskin Dine Maminus of Chayshen Mishpat. That's a higher level. So you say, you'll hear people say, oh, he has Yadin Yadin smicha. Of course, I remember Yadin Yadin used to be a very rare smicha. Now it's apparently it's more common today. So I don't know if it has the same cachet. But in the time of the Gemara, there was a third level. Yatir Bechoros Yatir. Yatir Bechoros. You're so learned. You have the koach to matir a bechor by saying it has a mum. Apparently, that was considered to be literally the highest ordination was to be matir bechor. Now, typically, yeshivas don't give you a smicha in you have the right to be matir a bechor because everybody today sells the ear. But lemaisa, you have to wait till the animal gets a mum. That's a very serious issue. I knew in Baltimore there was such a case of a Jewish couple. They were not from. And they owned a petting farm. And it was very popular. They had a lot of religious kids coming to see. They even had exhibits about Melechet Shabbos, weaving, and all, you know, old-fashioned looms, you know, to give kids a sense of what things were like. And they actually had a Bechor sheep. They had a firstborn sheep with Kedushas Bechor that didn't have a mum because they weren't aware of this halacha. They became religious, but they weren't aware of the halacha of Bechor. And not only are you not allowed, I mean, if I have a Bechor, I'm not allowed to shecht it, that's obvious. I'm not allowed to shear its wool. I'm not allowed to work with it. I can't have it do anything. I'm not allowed to even put my hand on it and the like. Now, apparently, I don't know what sheep do in the wild, but apparently a domesticated sheep, if you don't shear the sheep, it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and eventually you can't even walk. It's very, like there's a Tzar Balichan. I don't know why that's not a problem in the wild. I don't understand, but this was a real issue. The sheep bike was top heavy, and it couldn't. So I don't know what the maskana. I can't have the haircut after a while. I don't know what the maskana was. I think the psak was that you are allowed to shear the wool to prevent the tsar of the sheep, but then you're not allowed to use the wool. You have to put it in the bag, like put it in Seamus, and the like. So if any of you are thinking of going into farming, please be aware of this. A halacha, it's an extremely important halacha, and it applies in Chutz La'aretz as well as Eretz Yisrael. The Truman, the Maser, is only an Eretz Yisrael problem, but Kedushas Bechor, wherever it's born, it's going to have that status. Okay, now, the only animals that have Kedushas Bechor are the offspring of a cow, a sheep, or a goat. Okay, number one, they're kosher animals, but they're also domesticated animals. If you have a deer or something like that, There's no bechor on a deer, although a deer is kosher. But there's one non-kosher animal that the Torah does say the offspring has holiness, and that is the offspring of a donkey, peter chamor, peter chamor. And the Torah gives the kedusha for the peter chamor. It's a bit of a mystery. Why does the Torah sanctify this? Now, I'll come to that in a moment. But let me explain, Chas v'Shalom, don't make the mistake and think that a firstborn donkey is brought as a korban in the Beis HaMikdash. That's vadai not the case. But it is holy in the negative sense that until you redeem it, you are not allowed to work with it, you cannot use it, you cannot get benefit from it. And the Torah gives you two choices. You either redeem it with a sheep, or you break its neck. You either kill it, or redeem it with a sheep. And the sheep that you redeem it with is called Pidyon, the redemption of Peter Chamor, the firstborn donkey, the firstborn child of a Chamor. Now, here, though, let me point out that the sheep that is a pigeon, Petra Chamor, is totally different than a sheep that is a Bechor. A sheep that is a Bechor is a Korban. Pigeon, Petra Chamor, is Chulin Gemurim. You just give it to a Kohen. The Kohen owns the sheep. He could do with it whatever he wants. It has no Kedusha. He does not have to wait until it gets a Mum. Right? So people are sometimes confused. A Pigeon, Petra Chamor, is not Kaddish. And even today, therefore, if I have a donkey, I have to separate a sheep and give it to a Kohen, and it's a pigeon Petra Chamor, and the Kohen can keep it, he can check it, he could keep it as a pet if he'd like to, if he'd like to have a pet, he could slaughter it, he could do whatever he wants. He could even give it back to me, because it's not Kaddish, it's just his property, he can give it back to me. Now, Lamaisa, I don't know how many Jews raise donkeys, there might be some, but Lamaisa, those that raise donkeys do the same thing, they sell the ear usually to avoid any issues, but every once in a while, there's a campaign where people like to do mitzvahs that come up very rarely. For example, in recent years, many people try to do the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein, where you send away the mother to take the eggs. People, you know, go out of their way. So some younger man, some Avrech, wanted to fulfill the mitzvah of Pigeon Petra Chamor. So he bought a donkey, a female donkey, that had not given birth and was pregnant. So he would own the Vlad and be able to give the Kohen. And he wanted to make a big ceremony because he wanted Klal Yisrael to see this mitzvah. So in Kikar Shabbat, he wanted to stage a Pigeon Petra Chamor. He actually sent invitations. You know, like in wedding invitations, they have a little picture of the chasen and the kala. Not the actual, right, but you know, they have a drawing of a chasen and the kala under the chuppah. So he had a drawing of a man having a donkey next to him, and he was holding a sheep, you know, the, kind of the mitzvah of Pigeon Petra Chamor. And he attracted, there were like, you know, people go, he attracted like 20,000 people to see the rare mitzvah of Pigeon Petra Chamor. Somebody asked Rabbi Yaakov at the time, you know, is it kedai to take off Seder to see the rare mitzvah of Pigeon Petra Chamor? Rabbi Yaakov looked at the guy as if he was crazy. He didn't even answer. He dismissed the question as a ridiculous question, but many, many people came, yeah.
If the sheep is redeeming the donkey, but the sheep isn't holy, like, where did the holiness go?
Yeah, it is a good question. I'll mention the same question by Pigeon Aben. Chris, let's go back a second, and that is, why is the sheep Kaddish? I'm sorry, why is the donkey Kaddish at all? Well, what holiness of the donkey. So the truth of the matter is, a lot of it is symbolic, and that is, the nation of Mitzrayim are called, what is the whole holiness of the Bechor is to commemorate the great miracle of Makas Bechoros. And the great miracle of Makas Bechoros was a twofold miracle, that the firstborn of the Egyptians died, miraculously, exactly at 12 midnight, Mamish. And there was also a miracle that even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Rishus to the Malach HaMaves, the Bechirei Yisrael were saved. Right? In other words, that's also a nice. Now, people ask the Kasha, but we say Makas Bechiris was done by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not by the Malach HaMaves. So there are different answers that are given, but Rashi does say this, Mishinitne Rishus L'Mashles. When the powers of destruction are given power, they don't differentiate between the righteous and the evil, and it took a special nes min hashamayim that it shouldn't spread to the righteous. So the holiness of Jewish boys and kosher animals, which are tohar, and they represent, they're connected to Am Yisrael, they're tohar, that represents the miracle of salvation, and the holiness, so to speak, of the donkey represents the miracle of destruction, because the Mitzrayim are called Chamorim. That is a term that is used in Tanakh. So it's not really a holiness, it's simply reminding me that Hashem destroyed this nation that is called Am Hadomeh L'Chamor. Am Hadomeh L'Chamor. So as a result, it's not really a holiness, it's simply a reminder, and essentially, you give the Kohen a Matana in gratitude for the miracle of what Hashem did to Mitzrayim. Okay, now, so we have the laws of Bechor Behema Tahora, and then we have the laws of Pidyon Peter Chamor, Then we have a third law of the firstborn, and this is the one that does apply today fully, and that is the mitzvah of pidyon haben. Okay, and I don't know if this is nogeh l'halacha to anybody. I'm sure you've discussed it. If you are the firstborn male, well, everyone hears that, of a Jewish mother, even if you're not the firstborn of the father. Let's say, for example, the father was married before and has kids from another wife, but you are the firstborn of the mother, so you must be redeemed by giving a certain amount of money, 5 siloim, which is basically the silver that's in 5 silver dollars. So actually it would be close in silver content, it would be like $25, but you give that to a Kohen, and that is called Pidyon HaBen. Ideally, we do Pidyon HaBen 30 days after birth, meaning on the 31st day, right? 30 whole days after birth. But if one did not have a Pidyon HaBen by day 31, one must have a Pidyon HaBen at whatever age you are. When you're 30 days old, your father is supposed to do it, but if you have to do it yourself, you must do it yourself. This is Pidyon HaBen. Now, there are a lot of kashas about Pidyon HaBen. One kasha, I'm just going to give you a kasha, I'm not going to answer it tonight, is that if Pidyon HaBen is, once again, to express gratitude to Hashem for saving the firstborn, why does only a firstborn of the mother do Pidyon HaBen? I mean, let's say I am the first child of my father, but my mother was married before. But I'm the first child my father had. I will get a double portion of inheritance, but I will not need a Pidyon HaBen. Pidyon HaBen is only needed if it's Petzerech. In fact, even the firstborn of the mother doesn't always have a Pidyon HaBen if she had miscarriages. Petzerech literally means I am the child who opened up her womb. If a woman had children before, there's no Pidyon HaBen. If there were miscarriages, there's no Pidyon HaBen. Even if the father never had a child. Even a firstborn child that is a cesarean does not have a Pidyon. A cesarean means instead of it going through the womb, it just goes through the side because the womb is too small. So l'chaira, all of these are very, very difficult. If the Yesod is Hakaras HaTov, that Hashem saved the firstborn, why do we require it to be a Bechor of the mother? See, this is the interesting paradox. Legabe Yerusha, Pishnayim depends on the Bechor of the father. Legabe Pidyon HaBen, it depends on the Bechor of the mother. Okay, but I'll come back to that. But what I wanted to share with you was a word from the Meshech Chachma, very, very Gavaldi word. That is, there's a Mishnah. We have a whole Maseches, by the way, in the laws of Bechor. There is a Maseches in Shas called Maseches Bechoros, not Brachos, Bechoros. What is Maseches Bechoros about? Maseches Bechoros is about all of the laws of Bechor. Bechor, Behema, Tahora, Pidyon, Peter, Chamor, and Pidyon HaBen. It's a very Lamdash Maseches, Maseches Bechoros. So in the Mishnah of Bechoros, it says the following din. It's a bit of a mystery. If I separate money, let's say I have a son and I'm going to redeem my son, and I set aside 5 selas to give to the Kohen, and I even say, this money is set aside for Pidyon HaBen, and the money gets stolen or lost before the Kohen gets it, but I already designated it. The halacha is, I am chayev and achrayis, meaning to say, I have not fulfilled my mitzvah until the Kohen physically gets the money. If the money is lost before it reaches the hand of the Kohen, I must separate it again. That's din number one. Din number two, if I have a firstborn donkey, and I separate a sheep to be given to the Kohen, and I've designated the sheep, this is the sheep I'm going to give to the Kohen, then if the sheep is lost or stolen or dies, I don't have to replace it. Because what patters you with Pidyon Peter Chamor is the hafrasha, is the designation. But for Pidyon HaBen, what patters you is the actual nesina. Now the Gemara seems to indicate this is a halacha l'Moshe Misinai, and we don't have any derivation. But, you know, the Gra had a shita, based on the Zohar, that there's not a single thing in all of Torah Shebaal Peh that is not alluded to in the Chumash. Even things that are drabbanans, you can find allusions to the Chumash. Certainly halacha l'moshe misina. In fact, it is said that towards the end of the Vilna Gaon's life, all he would learn is Chumash. He would learn from Sefer Torah. He would learn Chumash from a Torah scroll. Because when the Gra read Chumash, he saw all the Gemaras, all of the Ramazim, all of the Kabbalah. He didn't need any other, I mean, he knew everything by heart, but he actually saw it in the Chumash itself. Such an amazing thing. So, because of this, what the Gra sometimes does is, the Gra will sometimes show you a makor in Torah Shebichsav that even Chazal, they didn't identify. Now, maybe they knew it, maybe they didn't, but they didn't tell us. He would be Megala, new Makairis. So the Meshech Chachma, who is much later than the Gra, the Meshech Chachma, the Or Sameach, follows that approach. And one of the things he does in the Meshech Chachma is, he will be Megala, a Makor, for a din in the Mishnah or the Gemara, even when Chazal did not give you a Makor. And here, he is Megala, a tremendous Makor. In other words, what do we want to answer? We want to answer the difference between Pidyon HaBen and Pidyon Petzer Chamor. This is in Parshas Korach. In Parshas Korach, it says the following. Kol Petzer Rechem, I'm sorry, Ach, yeah, this is Perek Yudches, Pasuk Tesvav, 18:15. Pado Sifteh Es Bechor HaAdam, you shall surely redeem the firstborn of Adam, V'yeis Bechor Behemah Tzmeah, and the firstborn of a non-kosher animal, meaning a donkey, Tifteh. Now you'll notice that with respect to Pidyon HaBen, it says the verb pidyon twice, Pado Sifteh, you shall surely redeem. With respect to Behemah Tzmeah, it only says Sifteh once. Now, the notion that a verb is repeated for emphasis is very common in the Torah. Let me give you two examples. By Shiluach HaKen, when you send away the mother, when you want to take the eggs, the Torah says, Shaleach Tishalach. Send away the mother, it says it twice. Another example, if you see somebody doing an Aveira, you're supposed to tell them not to do it. So the Torah describes it, Hocheach Tochiach Esamisach. Now, in both of those places, by Hocheach Tochiach and Shaleach Tishalach, the Gemara has a drasha. It doesn't have the drasha here, but the Gemara has a drasha that the reason why it repeats the word is to teach me Afilu Mea Pa'amim. That even if I send away the mother and it comes back, I got to send away the mother 100 times. Hocheach Tochiach, I tell you not to do it, even if you're not listening to me, I tell you 100 times until you hit me. If you're going to hit me, I'm putter from Tochicha. So the repetition connotes Afilu Mea Pa'amim. So the Meshech Chachma says, we can take the same drasha that Chazal make by Hocheach Tochiach Afilu Mea Pa'amim, and by Shaleach Tishalach Esoheim Afilu Mea Pa'amim, let's apply it here. Pado Sifteh, you must redeem your firstborn even 100 times. But what does that mean? I don't have to redeem my firstborn 100 times. Answer, that's the remez of the halacha, that if I set aside the money and it gets stolen, I got to replace it. Masha'ein Kain, by Pidyon Petzer Chamor, it only says the word redemption once. You don't have the Mea Pa'amim, so as soon as I redeem by setting aside a sheep, that's going to be enough. I'm not going to be Chayav in Achrayis. That's Gevaldik, because what this does is, this is taking a drasha that Chazal made in a different context, and applying the same drasha is Megala, a Makor, for a din in Chazal, for which Chazal themselves didn't tell us the Makor. Now, as I say, I don't know if the pshat is that this was the Makor of Chazal, and they just didn't say it because maybe they figured we could figure it out as the Meshech Chachma figured it out. Or is it the pshat that they were Makabal Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, and this is a new chiddush of Rav Meir Simcha, to uncover a Halacha L'Moshe Misinai from from the diuk in the lashon of the psukim. But this is not it. He now has a part two, which is even greater. That is, this is not the first time the mitzvah of pidyon haben is given. The very first time the mitzvah of pidyon haben is given is in Parshas Bo, after Yetzias Mitzrayim. Right, those are the parshiyos of Tefillin, Kadosh Li Kol Bechor. And there we do have a kasha, because in Parshas Bo, when it talks about pidyon haben, it doesn't use the double verb, pado sifte. Right, in Parshas Bo, Kol Petr Chamor Tifte Baseh. Redeem your Chamor with a sheep. Only once. That's the same as Korach. And then it says, Kol Bechor Adam Bevanecha Tifte. So, how come it says Pado Sifte in Parshas Korach, and it only says Sifte here? That's a good kasha. So, here's an important thing to notice. And you know, we're so used to knowing the halacha that we don't realize what the Chumash says and what it doesn't say, because we just kind of put it into the words. If you read Parshas Bo, there is a mitzvah to redeem your firstborn son, but it does not say in Parshas Bo that the money goes to a kohen. It does not mention giving it to a kohen. It just says redeem. It doesn't say what you do with the money. The first time that it says you give it to a kohen is only in Parshas Korach. As I say, these are kind of these synaptic lapses that we have, because I'm sure when people read Parshas Bo and they read Pidyon HaBen, they immediately think, oh, give kohen. It does not say kohen there. The Meshech Chachma wants to say a chiddush. The Meshech Chachma says that the Pidyon HaBen that was noyeg before the chedek, in other words, from the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the firstborn children were kaddish because they were saved, but the kohanim didn't yet have their kedusha until after the Cheid Ha'ego. So the original Pidyon HaBen, had there not been a Cheid Ha'ego and had Kohanim not been chosen, you would have given the Pidyon HaBen money to the Beis HaMikdash, to the Mishkan. It's only as a result of the Kohanim being chosen, the Cheid Ha'ego, that they become the recipients in Parshas Korach. Or maybe even not Chayrego, maybe as a result of the Meriva of Korach, because Korach was claiming Kohanim and Levim had no authority. But the original form of the mitzvah was to the Mishkan. So now the Meshech Chachma says the following. We have a rule by Hekdesh, by anything you give to the Beis HaMikdash, Amiraso Ligavoa Kimisiraso Lehedjadami. What does that mean? When I declare that this sefer, this chair, this table belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, even before they make a kinyan, my verbal declaration makes it theirs. Hekdesh does not need a kinyan. Property becomes property of the Beis HaMikdash by mere declaration, without a kinyan. So Zakti Meshech Chachma, since in Parshas Bo, the Pidyon HaBen money would have gone to the Mishkan or to the Beis HaMikdash, you wouldn't be chayiv in achrayis. If after I designate the money gets stolen, I'm not chayiv because the Beis HaMikdash already got it as soon as I was makdish. So memela in Parshas Bo, where it didn't go to the kohen yet, it only says the word podeh once, because as soon as I designate the money, the mikdash has it. So if it gets stolen, not through my negligence, I'm not chayiv. But in Parshas Korach, the Torah's machadesh a new halacha. The new halacha is the money does not go to the Beis HaMikdash. The money does not go to the Mishkan. The money goes to the Kohen. Vis-a-vis a human person, he does not acquire ownership until he makes a kinyan. That's why, pado sifteh, if it gets stolen before he gets it, you're chayiv and achrayis. Now, logically, that would be equally true for pidyon petach chamor, so that's the gzeiras hakasev to differentiate. That pidyon petach chamor, even though it goes to the kohen, you're not chayiv and achrayis. That's a leniency. But it's a gevaldige diuk. Why in Parshas Bo it says tifteh, And in Parshas Korach, it says Padai Sifteh, because the original pigeon Aben would have gone to the Mikdash, and it's only in Parshas Korach it goes to the Kohen, both because it's after the Cheder Egel and Kohanim were chosen, and as a way of reinforcing the holiness of the Kohen in Am Yisrael, which was needed after the rebellion against Korach, that Kohanim had to be shown to have that establishment. So you really see two nekudos that the Meshech Chachma uses in more than one place. Number one, as I indicated, the Meshech Chachma is mishtadel, to follow the Shita of the Gra, to be megala, right, to be megala, a makor in Torah Shebichsav, for halachas that Chazal did not give a makor for. And the second thing you see, you know, again, lahavdil, and forgive my irreverent analogy, you know, there are novelists who like to write in the genre of alternative history, meaning to say, what would have happened if, you know, Hitler would have won the war, or if Charles Lindbergh's kid would be found, whatever it would be. They like to write a whole. So the Meshech Chachma often does this in explaining the psukim, that what form would the Torah have taken had there not been a Cheder Egel? And he shows in a number of places that certain mitzvahs that were given before the Cheder Egel originally had a different meaning than the meaning they had afterwards. In fact, for example, one example, I don't want to be marich in it, is the Meshech Chachma posits, had there not been a Cheder Egel, we would have been permitted to build the Mishkan even on Shabbos. And it's only a result of the Cheder Egel that we can't build the Mishkan on Shabbos, right? See, he's medayik. That is why before the Cheder Egel, Shabbos is not even stated till after all the mitzvahs of the Mishkan are given. But in Vayakel, which is after the Cheder Egel, Moshe first tells them about Shabbos. Why is there that difference in order? Because prior to the Cheder Egel, Mishkan would have overridden Shabbos. After the Cheder Egel, Shabbos overrides Mishkan. It's an example. Now, people ask Kashas, how could that be? The Torah was eternal. The Torah predated Brias HaOlam. But, you know, I think we talked about this on Tuesday. This is the whole problem of well, the Torah has so many sins that people committed, but l'chaira, we believe in free will, so it would have been possible not to commit those sins. The answer is the Torah itself would have the same letters, but they would be arranged in different ways based on the decisions that people make. So the same thing here, the mitzvahs would have been different had there not been a Cheder Egel. And the Meshech Chachma posits that Pidyon HaBen would have been different. The money would have gone to the Mikdash, or the Mishkan, instead of the Kohanim. And Lagabi the Mishkan, we have the halacha Ami Rase Lagavaya Kimisi Rase Lahajin, right? So this is again a very, very interesting idea. Maybe I'll go back to a kasha I didn't answer. Yeah, okay. So let me go back to the kasha that I asked before. And that is, why is the only Bechor that has holiness a Bechor of the mother and not a Bechor of the father? Bechaira in Mitzrayim, the Malach Amavis was spared all Jewish firstborn. And if that's the case, all Jewish firstborn should have Kedusha. That's kasha number one. Kasha number two. There is a big contradiction here. On one hand, in Mitzrayim, Hashem tells us to put blood on our doorposts so that the Mashchis, the angel of death, will not enter our houses. That implies that the one that was killing the firstborn of Egypt was the Malach HaMavis. But we say by Makas Bechoros, the Avarti Be'eretz Mitzrayim, I'll do it. Ani v'lo Malach. Ani v'lo Sarah. So what was it? Was Makas Bechoros effected through the Malach HaMavis? Or was Makas Bechoros effected through HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself? So, they say B'Shem Rebbe Kivegar. I don't know where this is. I saw it brought down in the Sefer. Rebbe Kivegar doesn't have a Sefer on Chumash. But they say B'Shem Rebbe Kivegar, a Gevaldige Teretz. The firstborn of the fathers were killed by God, but the firstborn of the mothers were killed by the Malach HaMavis. Why is that so? Because the firstborn of the mother is something that an angel can know, right? You know, just even a person can know, right? You know, you watch a woman, they watch this woman, and the woman either had a kid before or didn't have a child before. That's shaykh to know. But the firstborn of a father, if it's not the woman's firstborn, and especially in Mitzrayim, when women were mezana with many, many men, it's impossible to know who, in other words, basically, it's much easier to know who your mother is than who your father is in a promiscuous society. Because in a mother, you came out of somebody's body. In the case of a father, if a woman is with many, many people, unless you have a DNA test, how are you going to know? And Mitzrayim, keep in mind, was an immoral society filled with zinus. So Reb Kiveger Tainis, the Malach was able to identify who was a firstborn child of a mother. But even a Malach would not be able to know, if a woman had children, if this is the firstborn child of the father, because the Malach wouldn't know who the father was. And even if the Malach knew who the father was, the Malach wouldn't know if this father had kids somewhere else. So as a result, the portfolio of killing the Bechor Me'av that was not a Bechor Me'aim had to be a Kadosh Baruch Hu Bechvodo V'yatzma. The firstborn child of a mother, a Malach did that, and that's what it means. Hashem didn't let the Malach Hamavis come into the Jewish home. But the firstborn of the father could only be done by a Kadosh Baruch Hu Bechvodo V'yatzma. That answers the contradiction. So now, listen to Rabbi Kiveger's Teretz, why Pidyon HaBen is necessary only for a Bechor Me'aim and not a Bechor Me'av. A Bechor Me'aim owes Hashem gratitude because a great miracle happened. Chazal say, what is the miracle? When the Malach HaMavis is given permission to destroy, the Malach HaMavis doesn't distinguish between the righteous and the undeserving. But Hashem made a miracle. He didn't let the Malach HaMavis kill. Now, the Malach HaMavis was only given Rishus over the firstborn of the mothers. So the miracle that the Malach HaMavis was stopped from entering the Jewish homes is a miracle only on the Bechor Me'av. The Bechor Me'av was HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In a sense, for Hashem not to kill the Jewish firstborn, that's not a miracle. There was no reason for them to die. When Hashem is doing it, He'll kill the people who are supposed to die. Right? So there was no, a Bechor Me'av didn't get any miracle in not being killed, because there was no demonic Malach HaMavis that was released. It was Hashem. So Hashem kills the guilty and spares the innocent. But the Bechor Me'av, for which power was given to the Malach HaMavis, it was a second miracle that Hashem didn't let the Malach HaMavis extend itself into the house. Right, so that explains why Pidyon HaBen is Bechor Me'aim, because that's the miracle. Mishnitna Rishus L'Mashchis Eino Mavchin Bein Tzadikim L'Rishon. Gevaldige, gevaldige teres. The only question on this, it's really a good teres, is let's consider the fast of the firstborn on Erev Pesach. Right? Any of you before, you fast on Erev Pesach. Hopefully you hear a siyum on Erev Pesach, so you don't have to fast. Now there too we say that it's a fasting to thank Hashem for being spared. But there we say you have to fast whether you're a Bechor Me'av or a Bechor Me'aim. But it's not a kasha from Kiveger. I mean, there's still a kasha. In other words, how come Pidyon, I mean, you could ask the kasha directly. Pidyon HaBen is only Bechor Me'aim. Tainus Bechorim is Bechor Me'aim U'Me'av. In other words, even without Rabbi Kiveger, there's an inconsistency, but Rabbi Kiveger makes the kasha stronger, because logically, if I'm only a Bechor to my father and not to my mother had kids before, then I didn't benefit from a nes, so I don't owe anything to Hashem, for which I have to fast. So that's a bit of a kasha. But I saw from Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach a very interesting thing. A big, big chiddush, he says. He says that the reason the firstborn fast on Erev Pesach, everybody thinks it's because of Makas Bechoros. And then we have the kasha, you know, why is it different than Pinyon Eben? He says that it has nothing to do with Makas Bechoros. It has to do with the fact that originally, before the Chedo Ego, the Aveda of Korbanos was done by the firstborn. And they lost it. Now, he said, what would be the saddest day of the year for a Bechor would be Erev Pesach, because that was the most Korbanos of the whole year. And every time they see a Kohen doing it, it's a tsar that they lost it. And therefore they're fasting to atone for the cheda ego, which caused them to lose the schus avaida. Now, if that's the case, it could very well be that the avaida of a bechor was both bechor me'av and bechor me'in, right? So, in other words, it's not connected to makas bechorus, it's connected to the loss of the divine service, and that might have applied to both. Although the emes is, it seems more pashut that the avaida was only bechor me'av. Normally, avaida went through the father. So then you have a reverse kasha. If the fasting is because of the loss of the avaida, that would have gone b'davka b'chor me'yav. Okay, but he seems to say that maybe it was both. Yeah.
So if he had been a firstborn Kohen, he wouldn't have to fast.
That's an excellent. Yeah, he actually asked the Kohen. I don't remember his teretz. I haven't seen it in the past few years. But he does ask the kasha. I think he asked the kasha, or someone in the footnotes asked the kasha, that l'chayra a b'chor Kohen didn't lose anything. And if a Bechor Kohen didn't lose anything, what is he sad about? Yeah, that's a good kasha. Yep. All right, so have a good Shabbos.